The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
And two women who have been turning it around, and one woman in particular who is turning it around in a way that takes my breath away when I think about what she does for our environment. Going to get all choked up here before I even get started. Two women, two of my sheroes, are going to be on the program today. First, the extraordinary Roz Savage. If you think Eat, Pray, Love is an interesting story, all the rage in the theaters now about Elizabeth Gilbert's journey to find herself, meaning, and life's purpose, if you think that's interesting, stay tuned. Roz Savage is an ordinary woman who has done extraordinary things in her young life. She's younger than me, so I can say that, early 40s, I reckon. And she has crossed multiple oceans, continent to continent, all for a cause, to raise awareness about the threats to our ocean, to raise awareness about climate change, and to do it one row at a time, one oar at a time, one amazing journey at a time. It is a real pleasure and honor to have her on. She's about to launch a speaking tour, and we're going to hear about her latest adventures, including writing her second book. So she's taking time out from that to speak with us. So please tune in and tell your friends to gather around the computer or the radio, however you listen, or find us on podcast tomorrow at thegreenfront.com. But listen live now at the Progressive Radio Network. And our second guest is another woman who is extraordinary in an environmental sense, another Shiro. Her name is Marcia Party, and she has been working in the Turks and Caicos Islands now for over 20 years, trying to protect the environment there, teaching children and fighting against resort developments in protected areas. She has just started something called the Adopt a Mangrove Program. She also is really up to some exciting things, and you're going to love hearing from her. But without further ado, Roz Savage. Welcome to the Green Front.
Great to be back. Hi, Betsy. How have you been?
I want to say welcome, girlfriend. I feel like we're friends because we met at Roz. I met Roz at Al Gore's training in Nashville. Since been back to Nashville, so that was a couple of trips ago. We were having wine in a hotel room, and I met you, and I think my jaw dropped when I met you, and about 45 minutes later, I closed it. So I didn't drink much wine that night, but I got filled up with inspiration, and I said, this woman just rocks my world, and she's going to rock everyone's world. And you were about to leave, literally within days, on another leg of your incredible journeys across oceans to raise awareness. And I followed you, and you did it, and you lived to tell about it, and now you're writing about it, and about to launch a national speaking tour. So thanks so much for taking time out to be with us and just check in and tell us how you are.
Well, it's life just gets more and more amazing all the time, really.
Well, you have an amazing life, especially.
So I suppose that the headline for 2010 in my life is that this year I became the first woman to row solo across the Pacific Ocean. I finished that on June 4th this year when I arrived in Papua New Guinea, having rowed a total of about 8,000 miles from San Francisco. But as you say, it's about more than setting records. In fact, the record's absolutely the least part of it. The whole reason that I got into the ocean rowing was because I had a bit of an early midlife crisis coupled with an environmental epiphany, and was frankly appalled at how ignorant I'd been about environmental issues. Not just ignorant, but, you know, I just hadn't even thought about it. I was just totally unaware. And that was me as a supposedly well-educated professional living in London at the time. And I thought, oh, my word, if I've been this oblivious to what we're actually doing to our precious Earth, then maybe other people are equally unaware, and maybe there's something that I can do. In fact, I feel like I have to do something to actually raise awareness and hopefully to inspire people to do their bit, to take a more responsible attitude towards this very precious planet, because it's the only one that we've got, and we have to take good care of it if we want it to take care of us.
Absolutely. And at the time, you were not, you might have been sort of emotionally adrift as you were searching for your life's purpose, but by all accounts, from the outside, you looked like the picture of success. You had a good job in the financial sector. You had your little red sports car. I think you were married. You were living in London. So not unlike many people who are educated, successful, living the good life, and yet something made you realize that this was not the life you wanted to look back on your deathbed, you know, many, many decades ahead.
That's right, because even though it might have looked like the perfect life, I had all the things that Margaret Thatcher had told me were going to make me happy, but the trouble was it just wasn't working for me. I had this feeling of dissonance between the life that I was living and the person that I was. I felt, I don't know if this was presumptuous of me, but I felt like I wanted to try and leave the world a slightly better place than I found it. I wanted to make a difference, and I hope that I say that with all due humility. But I think actually we all have a lot more potential to make a difference than maybe than we realise. And when I look back over the last 8 years or so since that formative day when I sat down and wrote those two very contrasting versions of my own obituary, the one that I wanted and the one that I was heading for. When I look back over those 8 years and see how much happier, how much more fulfilled, how much more purposeful I am now, I am so glad that I was just miserable enough in my old job and my old life that I reached that fork in the road and that I chose this path.
And that you did it at a young enough age.
So
you really had
exciting.
I'm sorry, and you did it at a young enough age where you had the vitality and, you know, the ability to just drop everything and really begin anew. And yet you were not, were you in your 20s or 30s at that point? I want to encourage people who might be thinking that it's too late to maybe not cross oceans to raise eco-awareness, although that is about the most noble cause I think one can take on. But it certainly was not an easy, comfortable choice.
It certainly wasn't. I think I was 34 when I feel like I took my sort of really big leap out of my the lifestyle that I was living before, and I was 36 when I decided to row across oceans, 37 when I actually set out to do my first ocean, which was the Atlantic. That was 5 years ago now. So
that was 8,000 miles ago, 3 million oar strokes, and 312 days alone at sea. That's according to your website. Maybe it's been updated since then, but those numbers are pretty staggering.
I think I'm up to something like 350 days at sea now. So, yes, cumulatively very close to a year of my life has been spent rocking around in a 23-foot rowboat.
I was putting around trying to find out more about your last voyage, and there isn't much up there yet. Maybe the website should be updated, because I knew you had done something amazing recently since I last checked in with you. But anyway, I want to hear more about the latest, because it's not all up there yet, and you're going to be talking about it on your speaking tour. But since this is a bit of an exclusive, I don't know how many interviews you've done yet since you got back, but would love to get a quick download on that and then ask you some questions about just, you know, where you go from here.
Sure. Yes, the new website's going to launch hopefully in a matter of days. There's a chap in Australia slaving away over a hot keyboard at the moment working on that. So it should all be fully updated and much prettier very soon. It's an overview of my big ocean rows, of which I've now done the four, the Atlantic 5 years ago, and then this three-stage row across the Pacific. In 2008, I rowed San Francisco to Hawaii, 2009 from Hawaii to a very interesting country called Kiribati, which is probably going to be one of the first victims of climate change, because a bit like the Maldives, they are very low-lying islands with no point of land more than 6 feet above sea level. So so they are understandably very nervous about rising oceans and extreme weather events. And then this year, in a mere 46 days, as opposed to my usual 100 days at sea, I rowed from Kiribati to Madang in Papua New Guinea. And you're right, you find me now on the threshold of a speaking tour of the US. I put, because I'm pretty much a one-woman team, or one woman and her mum, I don't have an agent to sort out speaking tour for me. So
M-U-M,
I put
mum.
The word out on my blog and said, I'd really like to do this thing. And is there anybody out there who would like to volunteer to organise an event in their home city? And I was absolutely overwhelmed by the response. And we've now got a pretty impressive tour set up, all by volunteers. We're all complete amateurs at this and making it up as we go along. But so far, it's all looking very promising, and I'm really looking forward to it. So that kicks off on the East Coast on September the 7th,
and
for about 5 weeks.
And your website is gorgeous and full of information. I love the chronology. You've got, you know, frequently asked questions. You've got your blog. You've got, you know, your story. And there's a fabulous video on there. I really encourage people to go and check that out right away. I watched it 3 times. You had some gorgeous pictures, some really numbing statistics about, I think, 60 million plastic bottles are thrown away every day in this country. Americans throw away 100 billion plastic bags every year. And you put that in the context of the power of one, that one person can make a difference, and that it's not just, quote, a drop in the bucket or a drop in the ocean in your case. There is a ripple effect, and it all adds up, as you go on to say, including our waste, our trash. And there was one great photo of, it looks like a climate rally probably in D.C. You're speaking, and someone's holding up a sign that says there is no planet B. I love that.
Yeah, well, it's so true, isn't it? And I think in our throwaway society, maybe we're kidding ourselves that we can just use up all the Earth's resources and then somehow throw it away and start over again. And, of course, we don't have that option. So we really do need to take care of this Earth. And, yes, I think my rowing is actually quite a good metaphor for that power of accumulation, that each of my big ocean crossings takes me about a million oar strokes, roughly 100 days of roughly 10,000 oar strokes a day. And so one oar stroke doesn't get me very far at all, but you take a million of them, and it makes a big difference. And similarly, you look at something like the level of CO2 in the atmosphere, or the North Pacific garbage patch, where there's this 3.5 million tons of plastic floating around in the middle of the ocean. And, you know, those things don't happen overnight. It's the accumulation of lots and lots of little actions, lots of careless decisions on the part of consumers. And every time we do something, every time we buy something or choose to drive when we could have walked, we're casting a vote for the kind of future that we want to have. And I think we really... I try and encourage people to be very mindful of that every action has consequences, and they really do add up, and that goes, it cuts both ways, good choices and bad choices, they all accumulate.
So having rowed the Atlantic and now the Pacific, any other oceans in your future after this latest small mirror joint? Jaunt, I should say, not a joint. Jaunt.
Oh, but of course. Well, there's still the Indian Ocean. And in fact, my boat is now in Australia. And I'll be joining the boat in January next year to get her ready to set out from Perth at the end of March in 2011.
And I love how you say it. You're British, of course, and you say we have to look after the Earth for it to look after us. Looking after, it's such a nice way to put it.
is that particularly British? Is that not an American phrase?
Well, it is, but just maybe it's the way I heard you saying it in your lovely British accent. Look after it. Look after is like we look after our pets or perhaps our plants or our children and the planet as well, yes, and we're not doing such a good job at that, are we?
Yeah, not at the moment, no. The Gulf oil spill happened while I was out on the ocean, and I felt like apologizing to the marine creatures that I saw when I was out there. Like, see, I'm really sorry, guys. We're making a horrible mess of your home. And the poor fish and the turtles and so on, they can't get out of that environment. If they swim into an oil slick, they're kind of stuck with it, really. And it just... I felt almost ashamed of being a human being because we really have impacted this earth so much more than any other species. But there again, I don't want to dwell on the negative because we are also amazing creatures and we have been blessed with this thing called free will. So we can still choose the kind of future that we want to have. And if we can create that vision of a cleaner, greener future, and then just do what it takes to work towards that. And again, this is something else I've learned from the rowing. I often struggle for motivation when I'm out there. Rowing across an ocean can be terrifying, but much more often it's extremely boring. And it's really hard to get my backside out of my bunk and back onto that rowing seat and carry on sticking the oars in the water. And I just have to keep reminding myself of the big vision, the goal, and why I'm doing this. And when you've got that really strong reason why you're doing something, it's so much easier to find the how. So much easier to find that day-to-day motivation to do the right thing.
And I just found another jewel on your website. If you click around, there's it's a treasure trove, truly, of wisdom and wit. And I just clicked on life lessons, and you just mentioned the oil spill, which I have called the oil kill because it killed everything in sight, including the tourism and fishing industry, and hopefully it will limp back. But you say the only constant in life is change, so don't get depressed by the bad times and don't get overexcited by good ones. Accept that things are exactly as they are, and even bad times have something to teach us. Are you hopeful that this graphic, very, you know, destructive example of what can happen, the dark side of our addiction to oil, what that has finally made Americans, and I'm sure, you know, all global citizens, not able to turn away from? I mean, this was all over the newspaper. This was on CNN almost every night for almost 100 days. Do you think we're learning the lesson about our not looking at the need to make changes to a more renewable energy future, and our Americans waking up? I realize you're just sort of back on the continent, just maybe in the last few days, but knowing you, you've probably been sort of getting a read on the situation, and because you do have this intimate connection with the ocean, having been out there and lived on it, you must have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, actually, last night here in Bolinas, there was a filmmaker called James Fox, who's been down in the Gulf of Mexico filming, and he was showing some of the footage. And it was quite interesting, this event, because it's in Smiley's Bar, which I don't know if you know it, but it's...
oh, yes. I was just there for the first time. We had dinner at the Coast Cafe overlooking Smiley's Bar. Apparently it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, bar in the West, and it looks like that, a saloon.
It very much is a saloon, and it's a bit of a saloon crowd in there as well. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, but they're probably not the people.
It was 5 o'clock on a Sunday, and there was shouting coming from inside constantly. And my friend who lives in Bolinas, I said, is something going on there we should look into and make sure is everything okay? She said, goes on constantly. It's a rowdy crowd, night and day.
But even the crowd in there, when these images came up on the screen of James's footage, of these horrible plumes of oil staining the surface of the ocean, there was this kind of like appalled hush. And as you say, that doesn't happen very often in Smiley's. So I think it really has created a very strong visceral reaction in people. And there was an excellent article that I read, somebody standing there on the shore and sort of asking who was to blame for this. And he had this moment of insight and realize that every single one of us that is using petroleum products, which is practically everybody unless you're living in a cave, we are all responsible. It's our demand for this dirty energy that has created the financial incentives for companies to behave in this way. There is a spreading of that awareness, and that... I mean, sure, BP is the big bad guy at the moment, but they're responding to customer demand, ultimately.
Absolutely. So we all need to look in the mirror. And I know you do that a lot, not so much look in the mirror, but look at your carbon emission footprint. And I know you labored over whether to fly to the States from China. You're going to go by boat, not your own. That would take too long. But even the ship journeys was not going to necessarily get you here in time to launch your speaking tour. And I know those of us who follow you just so appreciate, the thought process that goes into this. And if you could just impart, a fraction of that to more Americans to really just be conscious about our choices, realizing the impact, positive or negative. And while you're right, we can't all go out and live in a cave or row everywhere or walk everywhere or bike everywhere. There's so much more we could do to reduce waste and unnecessary use of fossil fuels and resources.
That's right. And I think, like many addictions, our oil addiction, the first step to curing that is to acknowledge that we have this problem and to become aware of it. And I think if I would have one wish, it would just be to get people to think about the consequences, because it is none of us are perfect. I do fly. I tread more heavily upon the earth than I would like to. And I'm afraid I do suffer terrible green guilt, which I try and get over on the basis that I always do my best. It's just sometimes I wish that my best could be even better.
A friend of mine wrote a book called Bag the Green Guilt, and it's all about things you can do so you don't feel guilty. And she's a mother of three, and she's got a whole book full of ideas that you can do, even if you're a busy mom or career gal. So Bag the Green Guilt, right?
Yeah, that's you're right. And there are so many things that we all can do and accept that we're not going to be perfect, but not being perfect is no excuse not to do anything about it. So every bit helps. It really does.
And nor is, you don't want people to feel guilty, but the reality is not enough people even feel guilty about their, eco-actions or the environmental impact of their everyday actions. But really it's been, in large part, we haven't been educated, certainly in this country, properly. It's not been part of the curriculum, in elementary, middle school, high school. It's starting to be, but when you think about it, what's more important than caring for our support system, our beautiful planet Earth, and by the way, she will not be able to support us if we don't look after it, as you say. And you're just doing so much to show the power of one to make a difference, and you're so courageous and impressive as a human being. And I know I sound like I'm just so in love with what you're doing, but I am. I have to say, you are my favorite guest. You and I have been interviewing environmental leaders for 13 years, and you're in a class by yourself. You really are, and I just so applaud what you're doing. I'm not quite finished with you. A couple more minutes, if you can hang with us. I want to talk about Eco Heroes. You have a website called EcoHeroes.me, and maybe you don't have to row across oceans and not even have anyone trailing you, which it makes you even more courageous. And I want to talk a little bit about what you subsisted on in terms of food and just some of the challenges you may have had, if we have time. But everyone can be an eco-hero. They don't have to do something quite as grand as what you are continuing to do, although we thank you from the bottom of our green hearts for what you are doing.
Yeah, the eco-heroes concept came about because I wanted to find a fun way to get across this message that every action counts and that we are all making a difference. And so it was loosely based on a social media game called Foursquare. In Foursquare, you check in every time you go to a cafe or a restaurant or a library or a gym or a public place of some sort. And you get bonus points for going to a new place. It's sort of encouraging a spirit of adventure. And so modeling on that, I wanted to make a way that people could get some immediate feedback in a fun kind of way for doing something environmental. So the idea is that people do at least one green deed every day, and they log it on their profile at Eco Heroes. And as they accumulate more points, they unlock particular badges. And it's really just trying to get people into good green habits that do accumulate over time. And in fact, we're going to relaunch a kind of Eco Heroes 2.0 fairly soon, because at the moment the points just accumulate and accumulate, so newcomers to the website maybe feel a little bit daunted that there are people on there who've already got, you know, well over 1,000 points. So we're actually going to just reset the clock once a week so that it's open to everybody. And it can be fun doing the right thing for the world. It doesn't all have to be terribly earnest. I think we need to keep a sense of humour about it because, Lord knows, we're going to have tough enough times ahead. So
Speaking of fun, I understand you're going to venture to Burning Man. I'm happy to hear you're not planning to walk from California to the desert of Nevada, Arizona, wherever it is. I've not been yet, but it's on my bucket list. Have you been before?
I haven't. I've been wanting to go ever since I first heard of it in 2007, but I keep being out on the ocean when it happens. So this year, this has been a totally last-minute thing. I was going to be working on my book, but I saw two good friends here in Bolinas last night, and I'm blaming it on the full moon, that I seem to have woken up this morning with the realization that this is a brilliant opportunity for me to actually get there this year. And I'm really fascinated in the concept of Burning Man as a kind of social experiment, because there's no money allowed there, and people just kind of trade favors. And I've heard that there's this amazing spirit of generosity, and people just share what they have. And I'm just really intrigued to see how this works.
Ocean Girl meets Burning Man. I'm sure there's going to be a whole chapter in your book because everything that happens there is interesting. And Lord knows you've got some great stories to bring and experience to bring to the party. A couple of things I have to ask you about before you go. And when I met you, I said, well, you must love the ocean and love swimming and love the water. And you said, no, not really. I think it kind of scared me. And that's one of the reasons you took on that challenge, if I'm remembering what you said correctly. And the other thing, I said, well, you must eat a lot of fish, of course, subsist on fish mostly. You said, no, mostly larabars. Are you saying that you don't catch and eat fish on these ocean journeys?
I generally, no, I don't do any fishing because it's pretty time-consuming, actually, to
don't you have a lot of time out there? I would think you've got plenty of time, no?
Well,
can't
I'm
fish
ready.
While you're rowing? I guess you can't put the fishing pole out there and keep rowing. You have to kind of hold, only have so many arms, right?
Well, that's right. And the preparation of the fish, I would have to take a whole different kind of cooking stove with me if I was going to be cooking fish rather than just boiling water. And you really have to cook the fish as well because a lot of them have got parasites. It would just be kind of messy and inconvenient. I don't really want to end up with fish guts. And I'm pretty much always rowing, eating, or sleeping. I don't have that much time or energy for that much else. Mm-hmm. So, no, I just haven't felt the urge to fish.
Unbelievable. And so you mostly subsist on sprouts and nuts and seeds and larabars. I hope they're sponsoring you. Larabars.
Larabar are, yes. I do also have an expedition meal for my dinner. I do have a hot meal once a day.
And there's no one tracking, I mean, there's people tracking you on land, of course, your mother and your wonderful associate, Nicole. But the other surprise to me was that there were not some boats, you know, 50 miles back behind you, just in case you ran into trouble.
You're right, yes. I'm just out there on my own. And for better or worse, I actually quite like it that way. The longest that I've been without seeing another human being was 104 days between Hawaii and Kiribati.
And one of the quotes you have on your website, lessons you've learned, be your own best friend. The more you rely on other people, the less control you have over your destiny. And you are a woman who is creating your own destiny and leaving quite a wake behind you just in terms of impact. And you may be out there alone, Roz, but you know you have so many people following you. And through the Internet, through technology, that's possible, which must give you some sustenance when you need it.
Absolutely, and I could not do what I do without the support of many, many, many people. As you say, the people who read my blog or follow me on Twitter or listen to the podcast, they give me such emotional support, and a lot of them, you know, chip in a little bit financially as well. And I feel so lucky to have all these amazing people in my life, and I think that was really brought home to me through this process of sorting out the speaking tour. Because there's no way that it would be happening without these incredible volunteers all over the U.S. who have been really working so hard to make this happen. And I'd just like to take this chance to say a huge thank you to all of them. And I really do appreciate all their efforts. They are absolutely fantastic. And that generosity of spirit is very humbling. It's true that no man or woman is an island. Mm-hmm. And yes, wonderful.
You are generous of spirit. You are humble. You are inspiring beyond words. And I just can't stop thanking you enough for not only doing what you do to raise awareness, putting yourself to the test, but taking time out to share your message, and particularly to share it with us on the Green Front today, especially under kind of quick notice. I'll let you get back to your book writing in Bolinas. Have a wonderful time at Burning Man. And when you are back for your book tour, I would love to not only catch one of your appearances, but I'm going to follow up with you afterwards and see if we can create an event in Marin County, because I know we could fill an auditorium with people once they know who you are and what you're up to. I would love to come hear you, so I hope it's not too late to do that.
We'll make that happen. That would be fantastic. Thank you.
God bless you, Roz.
It's been a pleasure.
Row on, and just keep on being yourself. You are truly an amazing woman, and I love what you're doing. I love who you are. I love what you stand for. I guess I just love you. And I haven't said that on my show to anyone in 13 years ever. But having met you in person and followed you all these years since we met, I guess it was about a year and a half, almost a year and a half ago. You know, I check in like 2 in the morning when I can't sleep. I go to your blog and do the Roz tracker and see where you are. And I just go, atta girl, you go. And when I get down, and we all do, and I start complaining, and I do, about this and that, I say, look at Roz. What would Roz do? You have really become my inspiration. So I want more people to know about you, because you are really walking the talk, rowing the row, and going with the flow, but with direction, conviction, and a purpose.
Betsy, you're a sweetheart. Thank you so much, and thanks for letting me share my story with your audience.
It's been a pleasure. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk to another woman who is not wasting mental energy asking herself if she can do something, which is another one of Roz's wise pieces of advice. She says, you surprise yourself, you will. And that's exactly what Marcia Pardee has been doing, surprising herself with what she has accomplished and continuing to work to accomplish. We want to spread her work, her message with you as well. Stay with us. You're listening to the Green Front Radio. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Obviously, very pleased to speak with Roz. And coming up, Marcia, there's nothing better than women who are rocking the world and making a difference. And so pleased to have both of them contained in 1 hour today. Be right back.